And welcome back. My guest this week is Sean Pattenden, journalist, podcaster, artist, author, illustrator, child star. She was in Doctor Who. I mean, you name it, she's done it. She's the queen of polymaths. And to top it all, for the last 13 years, she's been doing that with child. So I was delighted when she came in to chat to me a few weeks ago. When you do a million different things, invariably there's going to be a moment where you need a bit of backup.
My mum once had to walk my son round when he was probably 1.5 or 2 round Soho doing absolutely nothing just to give me the hour I needed to go and do something. Yeah. They had nothing to do.
No, because there's nothing to do in Soho for kids.
No, absolutely not. And he was probably crying for about 40 to 45 minutes of the time, because that was the point where he would just cry in the pram. Yeah. Just gonna cry now. I'm going to repeat one word constantly. And that word is mango. That was, we had a few mangoes. Anyway, he laughs about it now. He can't remember. I can.
Can you?
I can remember. Yeah. I remember all of them. Yeah.
So what were your ideas about having a child?
Interestingly, the first thing I think I said, it was actually my husband of the time said, should we have a kid? And I went, yes, well, obviously I'll have a think about it, but I do think that we need to sort out who works, who doesn't, when we're going to do it. Approached it as if it was some terrible sort of topic, something that needed to be addressed and written down, some sort of essay that we probably had to write at the end of it. And as such, was completely inexperienced and had no knowledge or wasn't really preparing properly for it ahead. I thought it was quite a good idea, but I thought, oh, God, we're going to have to do the 50-50 childcare thing. Yeah. Self-employed. Will everyone think I'm a mum? Will they stop giving me work? I immediately became anxious.
Yeah.
Thought it might be quite a good idea. Became very, very anxious. And to deal with that anxiety, what I did as human was decide to learn nothing about birth. Nothing about the 9 months before. No, absolutely nothing. I was going to be quite delusional and sort of just get on as a human, because I was so worried my brain was going to fall out with the baby because they come out together. Do you know that in some cases?
Yes, they do.
I was woefully unprepared. Within 2 weeks of having a baby, I got a subscription to Vogue magazine.
What?
But I didn't kind of realise at the time. I just thought, that's a good idea. And then afterwards, I just think that's those two are connected. There was something about keeping an idea of looking all right, not letting yourself go. This sort of kind of Alf Garner idea that was in my head somewhere, that women let themselves go, don't they, after they've had babies. And I also found that there was, for a period, very high wedge shoes were in. And if you're pushing a pram, you can wear really high shoes. You can wear stilettos and wedges
because you've got something to lean on.
It's like having a Zimmer frame as such. And so there's quite a while people go, God, you got your high shoes on. Yeah, it's like, yes, I have, because I've got a baby. And somehow the two went together fairly well.
And then you park the pram and just fall over.
Absolutely, that did happen. yes, teetering as you do over Heathland and things like that. I found myself, suddenly, oh, God, why do I wear these shoes? But that was quite good. That was definitely a denial thing. Or maybe that was just embracing my new femininity.
Maybe it was. Yeah.
I remember my mother-in-law gave us the Gina Ford baby book, which I don't think she was quite aware who and what Gina Ford was.
And I had a copy of it. I didn't know.
I looked at that and the horror, and you know, the scheduling. Yeah, everyone will know what the scheduling is. Oh, by minute, yes. And put it away and didn't look at it again. So, yes, very, very unprepared. But there was also a kind of, I was thinking on the way about what sort of, where you get your information about, not how you make babies or, you know, how they come out, but what you do with them. And I was thinking, well, I had EastEnders. Well, you'd have one and it was fine. And you probably had a bit of a row about it. Rosemary's Baby was big. Well, it might be the devil, but I can live with that. I think that'll be fine, because obviously you get glittering careers and things like that in there. But the other one was Friends. And I had a period of watching Friends. I don't know why, please, I've never watched it since. And when Rachel had a baby, she put it in one of those seats and she sat it at the corner of the room. And this is a newborn in Friends, obviously, because it's a TV program. It's not real life. No, she sat it there while she got on with things and had conversations with Ross and Chandler. Yes, and I thought, oh, that's what you do.
Yeah.
And so my 9 month preparation was mainly thinking, if she puts her baby in a little chair, I'll do that and just get on with my work.
Yeah, yeah, because the baby will just lie there because it can't move and what else is it
going to
do?
Oh, sometimes it will gurgle happily.
Yes.
Just to say it wants a feed. There, fine. So that
Did that happen?
It didn't happen, Sophie, no. But the other thing, so I've got the other Rosemary's Baby style thing. Okay, so I've got no friends who've got little babies. I've got one friend who had kids who probably the youngest was 8 by that point. So she'd completely forgotten about it.
Yeah.
And we hadn't found out what the sex was of the baby yet because the scan, I think it was just before the scan, and my mum sat me down. And you know when your mum and... It's usually your mum, but sometimes your dad. When you have a really important talk and it's usually making a bed or clearing up kitchen things, you're doing something really domestic. You're not walking something, you're sort of dealing with that.
Yeah.
And we were sorting out things from above her attic and sorting out old school books or something. She was having this conversation and she went, "You do know we can't have boys."
What?
I didn't know that. Mum, tell me more. Oh, we can't have boys. And I remember I had a brother that died.
Oh, God.
4 hours after he was born, when I was about 3. And she said, well, you know, it's kind of this family myth, family thing. But, you know, obviously there was your brother, Henry. And I went, oh. She went, and my mum had a boy who died as he was born. As he was coming out, he died. Oh, and she said, I'm sure there's some stuff in the path. And I just went... Okay, fine. We hadn't had the scan. We had the scan. What was the scan?
Oh, my
boy.
God.
So that was also the, I don't feel that I've got the tools for this. I'm really unprepared. So I was very, very anxious for all of the pregnancy.
So how did you deal with that? Were you sort of, did you dismiss that as a kind of, oh, well, I'm sure it'll be fine? Or did you just think this isn't even going to happen? So I might as well just watch Friends.
Yeah, I thought I'll watch Friends because they seem to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
No, there was a really large part of me that was freaked out and thought maybe this isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Maybe it isn't. And because when I was little, my brother died, I know that sometimes things don't happen.
Yes.
And it wasn't that I thought, right, I'll take loads of cocaine and drink whiskey.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't do that. I was very, very sensible and ate correctly. But I was slightly, and maybe I wouldn't be so much now, but you're younger and you're pregnant and there's hormones and stuff. I was quite freaked out by it and very, very careful. I was polyhydramnious, which means you've got too much liquid in you. You can be the opposite. The amniotic fluid.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a... I had to keep going into that. Then, Sophie, was the gallstones.
Oh, my God.
Which were brought about by the hormones from pregnancy, but weren't diagnosed until after I had my son, who is, needless to say, is a very healthy, beautiful 13-year-old boy now. I had gallstones, so I had this amazing pain that they told me was indigestion all the way through the pregnancy. Thank you very much. I don't know if you or any listeners have had gallstones, but that's not indigestion.
No,
pain.
I've heard they're really painful.
Oh, yeah. So I had that as well. So I had to keep going in with indigestion to A&E in the middle of the night going, can you just check the baby, please? Because it doesn't feel like indigestion. Yeah. So I had that as well. Yeah, it's great.
Oh, my God.
People have it worse. But,
Carrie Ann Lloyd was talking about how, like, and I think there's something in it, when something bad has happened, and she was talking about it in the context of death and grief, you know, it sort of means that logically it kind of can trigger a lot of anxiety because you think, well, it did happen to my brother. So actually... That's not crazy of me to think that it might happen to me.
Yeah.
Has that kind of spilled over into, you know, since your son has grown up, do you have any of that anxiety about his welfare or anything like that? Or
the wonderful thing about him being born, although that process took 32 hours and I had an emergency C-section, that was good fun. And they do pack you in very tightly afterwards. I don't know if you have. It took 1 minute to take him out, 15 to get you back in. And you can feel it, obviously.
Yeah,
it doesn't hurt. But it's like re-putting stuff back in a potting shed.
Yes.
It's really bizarre.
Oh, my goodness.
After that, and after the first couple of days, I lost a lot of blood, so it did feel quite strange. He looked so healthy, and he was so happy. You know that moment after about a week when they stop sort of looking like they're a very old man, it's just about to give the most poetic speech about coming out with 1 week old baby. He was so happy and healthy and grew up speedily and at the right pace and all the things that you worry about. Yeah. Maybe he'll stop. I used to look at him at 3 months old there thinking, maybe he'll just stop developing. That would be quite strange. Here's my 40-year-old son. He's still not sure.
And he's like,
It went. And the wonderful thing is it went. All that irrationality, all that... And obviously, there's the emotional... It's something's coming back to you, that childhood trauma of it.
Yeah.
That goes. Yeah, and the wonderful thing, it does go.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been a sort of spooky Rosemary's Baby child.
No.
The strange boy in the corner. Yeah. Although I was toying with calling him Torpor at one point, because I thought he'd be like an Edward Gorey character or something. Oh. Just, drawing odd weeds coming out of pavements and things. He's not like that at all. This is a place, PS4. Totally normal, thanks. Yeah. So it was a very peculiar... See why I referenced Rosemary's Baby. It was quite peculiar at the time. Yeah. But most of my friends hadn't had babies and weren't pregnant. So kind of just tried to think of it not happening because they would have thought I was really crazy.
Yeah.
What's really going on with my mind?
And so what... So my sister is just about to have a baby. I mean, she could be having a baby right now.
Oh, God.
And she is... So I had... My baby's quite late, so everyone I knew had kids.
Right.
And quite old kids.
Yeah.
Whereas, I say late, I mean, it's stupid, isn't it? Or just when I was older. And is having her first baby at... She's 31. Which, again, isn't super young, but it kind of is in the context of her life where we are. You mean, with her, amongst her friends, none of her friends are having kids and whatever. And she was being quite funny, saying on her due date, lots of her friends were texting her going... you can't believe that, by the end of today, your baby will be born. And she was like, no, it doesn't work like that. Do you know what I mean?
No.
She was kind of horrified at how... She was like, oh, my God, I really am on my own. Like, no one understands this.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you... I mean, you had friends who had older kids, but was that hard not having friends around who had kids?
Well, it was the denial thing. I was an enormous amount of denial. I said so then, and I will say so now. I refused to go to NCT.
Mm-hmm.
I just refused to have things in common with people who were just having children. That was our bonding. That was our common ground. I mean, that sounds so crappy and stuck up, but I just wanted to be me. I didn't want to lose myself.
I would have been the same had I not. Younger, I think.
There were a couple of NHS things that you went to that would be like, well, you go to hospital and you must remember to bring a towel.
Yes, they ran courses. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I remembered to bring a
and
towel.
And a toothbrush. Yeah.
And a book. What?
Yeah, yeah.
I spoke to my friend who emailed me her birthing plan. Her birthing plan was... at least 5 or 6 A4 pages of hilarity. I mean, really, it was. And if this happens and this happens, this is a beautifully choreographed, orchestrated birth that obviously hadn't happened for her firstborn. Yeah. And they encouraged you to make a birthing plan. And mine was mainly, well, could you, as soon as there's any pain whatsoever, I'd like all the drugs. And if you could just wake me up afterwards, that would be fine.
Yeah.
I really, because I knew that it, I didn't know how horribly weird and how extended an experience it would be. But at least I sort of wasn't prescriptive. Is what I'm trying to say.
I think I did do NCT, and the only thing I got from it was the basic facts about the different options open to you at birth. And it's a bit like contraception in the way that there's no perfect one. Like they all come with like, do you know what I mean? They all come with, but there's that.
Yeah.
But there's that, And so you kind of, what I realised was it was like, okay, well, what's the point in doing a birthing plan? Because my body's going to kind of do what it's going to do. And I'm either going to be able to take it or I'm not going to be able to take it.
Yes,
and
there's no point.
There's all that thing with an epidural, for instance, which is like, if you're too far gone by the time you get to the hospital, they're not going to give it to you because it will slow down the birth.
Yes.
So, and I knew when I had my son, when I got to the hospital, I was like, I just had an inkling. I was like, well, this is going to happen like right now, isn't it? Like, even if I'd
yours
wanted
to. Yours was very quick, I heard.
Both times,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Six
so
hours,
lucky.
5 hours. Yeah, I think it is lucky. Yeah. I was really lucky with both of them. Yeah.
One thing a locum doctor told me, also she said, well, let's hope it's not a boy, because boys are awful. She said that in the GP surgery and then told me it was like shitting a pineapple, and just, I completely freaked me out.
It was worse to give birth to a boy than
a girl? Yes, because boys aren't very nice, was her worldview. Just think
what
who
you mean?
You've employed.
Not, nearly so not like physically.
Oh no, just
no, just like you know how horrible to have a boy.
Yes, psychologically.
Oh, that's such a horrible thing to
wasn't
say.
Wasn't it? Really, really odd thing to say. And I almost wrote, now I'd write a complaint to the GP.
Of course.
I would do that. Then I was just like, oh God, we're doomed.
But that's the thing. That's what's so weird about having a baby is that I don't think there's really any time where your life changes so massively and you're dealing with such huge things, and yet you're like a quarter of the person you usually are because you're physically, you know, kind of, you know, under par. Mm. You're not sleeping.
Yeah.
You're doing it all for the first time. So it's kind of like there's loads going on. You know, you're not sleeping and you're more tired because you're trying to work it out. Oh, you know, and the phases change every day, you know, that they're suddenly doing a new thing. Oh, we've got to change the amount of food they're eating. You know, whereas now, my kids, I give them food. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's all kind of settled, you know, and it's kind of like a few things change every couple of months. But, like, it's not like it is when you have a tiny baby. And it's like, and that's when you look back and you go, God, I could have stood up for myself, or I would have said this, but there's no way you just can't.
You just don't have you don't have that in you anymore.
No.
And love to deal with.
Yeah. It's really hard. I think that's one of the biggest things, actually, which is sort of trusting your instinct and realising. I had a similar thing with the books and the reading books, and like reading a so I've decided, I think Zach was literally like 6 weeks. It was stupid. I was like, right, I need to go on to the next thing. I need to read a book and see what I need to do in terms of, I can't remember what I was deciding I was going to try and get him to do. And I read the book and I went mad for about 2 days. I need to do this and I need to get him to sleep. And then, a friend of mine, and I was like, I read this book. And I was talking to a friend of mine who had 3 kids, and she was just like, you were fine a couple of days ago. Mm. Maybe just put the book away.
Burn that book.
Burn the book. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, God, the books.
But it's, I mean, they're such a source of, they can be really damaging, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I once tried to do the crying out thing and it made me cry. It was too difficult.
Yeah.
It was so awful.
It's horrible.
Oh, God, I never did it again.
No. Yeah, I mean, I did.
But you're talking to the woman who woke up at 4:30 at the latest every morning until Fred went to school, my son, at 4.5.
Oh,
we used
man.
To, because he didn't sleep, and he didn't really sleep much in the day. And I was trying to do writing at those points, like J.K. Rowling. I've read what she said. Okay, when child is asleep, that's where you go to the cafe and write. Didn't sleep. He'd wake up every couple of hours, but there's a period where he woke up at 4:30 every morning and then went to sleep at 6:30. And Fred and I would sit in front of the TV and I'd watch Big Brother's Big Mouth, Russell Brand on it.
Yeah.
Quite funny. Bergerac. And then by the time Bergerac had ended,
he's gone back to sleep.
Yeah. And then
go back to sleep?
Yeah, mostly.
Right.
I was so exhausted.
Yeah.
I did look like a ghost for 4 or 5 years.
I mean, it is.
It's hard.
Yeah.
That was one of the hardest things, is the no sleep thing. And people go, ha ha. Or they go, my baby sleeps for 12 hours. And
oh my God.
You know, I feel quite strong that I haven't murdered those people. There's about 20 who've told me of that. They could be dead now, but they're not.
So they should be very grateful.
They should be very grateful.
Yeah.
It was awful. And now I've got a teenager who wants to sleep till 12 on the weekends.
Oh,
sometimes
God,
I start
wait.
Doing things. No, you do things really, really loudly at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Good.
Oh, sorry, did I wake you? Oh, I'm terribly. Why don't you try and go back to sleep?
And of course, you're now hardwired to never enjoy a lie.
Yeah. No, never.
We had a little party for my daughter on Sunday because it was her birthday. Oh. And one of my best friends who doesn't have kids and is Sadie's godmother came over and said, I'm so sorry we're late. I didn't wake up till 1. And I just looked, I tried to look at her with love. And I was just like, I really hope that soon you're going to understand quite how disgusting that is. Privileged. So how did having your son affect your sense of self and your kind of attitude to work and all that kind of thing?
Well, I was really keen to get back to work. Unfortunately, I'm self-employed and wanted to... I had been trying to write children's books, and I had written one that was going to be... When had I written it? I can't remember. It gets quite blurry, but it was... I'd written it and finished it by the time that Fred was born. That was the first in the series, which I illustrated as well. So I got quite a lot under my belt. I do remember doing an illustration job, and the person who wanted corrections to this job was trying to call me. It's like, she's in labour. She's actually in the hospital. That, you know, they don't really stop. The world of work is very keen for you to get back into it. Although I would say some newspapers I worked for didn't have me back, and I can name names, but they didn't have me back after a baby. Even though I was freelance, the phone stopped ringing in that sense. And when you said, oh, you know, if you've got anything coming up, that does happen, girls.
It's really hard, isn't it? Because I had that too.
Yeah.
Where regular channels of work, my two main channels of work that had been regular work givers for a long time just stopped. And I know it's because they were like, oh, well, I don't think it was personal. I think it was just like, oh, well, we know she's just had a baby.
Yeah, so they, just assume, yeah, they just assume that you're in the baby bubble.
Want to. Even though I'd said explicitly, I will still need to work. I need to, do you mean, I need to work. I don't
And you
have...
panic because you don't know how you're going to feed the child. You know, when it starts eating solids.
But it's, but then equally, I think there's lots of people have talked about a fear that it's all going to dry up.
Yeah.
And so you end up doing, again, Carrie Ad, I think, was talking about doing a show, an ostentatious show, which is a kind of improv show based on Jane Austen kind of style.
Ah, yeah.
And, you know, wearing a corset and stuff when she was pregnant, I think.
Ooh.
And quite pregnant. And looking back on it and thinking, why was I doing that? Either she was very pregnant or she just had a baby. Mm. But either or, she looks back on it going, why did I didn't need to do that. That wasn't going to go away.
Mm.
You know, I could have just... So there's a kind of like, on the one hand, I think... You're right that you have to be careful and show, but then what else can you do other than say, I'm available for work?
Yeah. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, the brain didn't fall out. Yeah. No, the brain, just the baby did. Yeah. Yeah. But it was difficult. So I was all set to do it, but I had these gallstones that still hadn't been diagnosed properly until just before New Year's Eve, after a particularly fatty meal at a friend's house. Oh, I was rushed to A&E with obstructive jaundice, nearly got pancreatitis. And still had a feeding baby. And they did a scan the next day, funny that, which I'd been waiting months for, and realised that they were there. And I had to emergency wean Fred, had to go on a low-fat diet, a zero-fat diet, so it didn't happen again, the gallstones, and then had 3 months to do all that before the operation. So all this idea of, well, and I'll write the novel there and the musical there and maybe I'll record an album. whatever's going on, there's the massive denial again, had to be put on hold, and I wasn't very well, which again, with the not sleeping very well, just made me not feel as 100% as I have done since. Yeah. So it was quite tricky. I said, people have worse. People have worse. But gallstones isn't that much fun. I don't remember. I was trying to wean him. It's really, really hard. And you could ring up a helpline and get someone in to help you who would just come for free and help families who were in a bit of a sticky mess. And I remember him at one point, she was holding him. She was a nice person. She was holding my baby. And he was looking at me and he was hungry. And I was having to say no to this 7-month-old baby. And he just turned his head. And it was the width of him turning his head going, right, I'm never going to forget this in my soul ever. You have spurned me.
Oh, my God.
That was really, really hard.
Especially as it was... Not would you have not chosen to have done that then?
No, I would have kept on. As much as it's uncomfortable and weird and you get one boob bigger than the other and it's the oddest situation to be in, it's quite convenient.
Yeah.
You know, it's all right. I was pleased I could do it. I was lucky that he could latch on and it could happen because I wasn't breastfed, which is why I'm so strange.
Well, so, I was. And I couldn't. So maybe I know.
But at least I got the process over and done with swiftly. Yeah. And he's not, you know, 5-year-old wasn't suckling at that point. We hear some people doing that.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it did all happen. It was all fine. But that was a setback for work. So I had another book to write, but I could sort of somehow, it's children's books. They're shorter. Write children's books. They're much shorter. 20,000 words, fine. 24,000 words, fine. I could do it in between those moments, and I set the next book in a hospital, so the kids are all in the hospital pretending to be ill so they can get off school. And I knew about gallstone operations and some sort of thing, so I could throw that all on in and think, oh, I can throw it in, I can write some of it. You know, you don't stop, you do write when you're in hospital and stuff. I write in the middle of the night when I'm watching Bergerac. So it, in a way, it was all right, and I could do it because I didn't have a proper job, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it was fine. But again, it was more of the unexpected thing. If I'm going to do this, I'm going to... No, you're not.
No. Yeah.
You're going to have an operation, Lee.
Yeah. I just wonder, I don't know if there's anything in this, but whether there is a kind of something hormonal that happens that kind of precipitates a creative surge. Like, I felt very creative around... Like, I wrote a script for BBC... Didn't get made like everything else, but you know, it was like commissioned script from BBC in between Zach and Sadie.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's
quite, you know, looking back, I thought, oh, that's quite a big thing. And I was really kind of driven, more so then than I am now, actually, like with babies around. Yeah, there was like this kind of drive, real creative drive that's probably,
But I think we are social animals, and what we're saying is this denial thing of, no, I'm not going to just be mum.
Yeah.
I don't want other people to think that of me, and I don't want to think of that myself.
Yeah. Maybe it is a sort of, it's a kind of defiant, because it takes a while. I remember asking Daisy Haggard, who came on, I can't remember what my question was, but she said something like, you feel more of a mother every day. It doesn't happen overnight. It just kind of, you know, so when people say, and I actually do remember, you know, holding my son for the first time, and I did, it's not that I didn't think he was amazing or whatever, but when people go, and when you hold your child for the first time and you just think, I don't want any, you know, and I think, well, I didn't feel that immediately. I didn't hate him. I was very happy.
I'm glad to hear.
You know,
yeah,
I mean, some people do, but I did, you know, I was delighted, it had all gone well, I was thrilled, you know, great.
Quick.
But I didn't suddenly have that feeling. No. It didn't turn on like a tap. Like, it actually, it gets, for me, I feel it just gets greater and greater and deeper and more kind of, you know, I don't know.
No, I absolutely agree with you. There wasn't a flick of a switch.
No.
And I'm mum, and I have empathy for everything and all the, is it oxytocin?
Yes.
It's spinning around, and this is my child, I've got to protect him. You think, who's that?
Yes, it's suddenly like, oh, what do I do now?
And fall asleep in hospital and they wake up, who's that? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hello? Is it a microphone?
And did it make you, having a child, did it change the way you saw how your parents had parented you?
Enormously. It just, it's like opening the wardrobe door, isn't it? It's the portal into some new sort of understanding. What people go through, there's something about, there's just, I have more empathy than I did. And I know that's a very bland statement to make, but I kind of felt that sometimes you see the world in the way that you want to see it, and it's a half, but it does give you the whole. I see what my parents went through. My mum was a single mum when I was born and eventually got married. I see how difficult it would have been for her.
She was a single mum when you were born?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
I don't have a father on the birth certificate, and she had to legally adopt me at three because if, which is stupid, in the 70s, if you got married to a man and he adopts your child that is not his, you as a woman had to do it too, because he's far more important, obviously. So as a woman, secondary citizen, you have to adopt too. So I am officially adopted, which is quite exciting. So I see the problems. I see all that. I see how difficult it must have been. And with me as well, it's probably quite difficult, I think.
So when did she marry... When you were older.
I call my dad at three.
Right.
And then she had... Okay, so then they had the son.
Yeah, right, okay.
Henry, who didn't live. And then my sister 2 years after.
God.
Who is fine. Much with us. Yeah. Yeah, so it gave me an awful lot. Recently, I found some writing. Only at the weekend, I found some writing that I was trying to write other books as well as the children's book. You know, before I had Fred and the few years of, you know, trying to conceive and that sort of thing, they would be very, very, they were very, very different to what I write now.
Yeah, yeah.
They just, there was a, I can't say it's a coldness to them, but I can see a kind of naivety and innocence. And I wouldn't have gone that far. I wouldn't have done that in the name of what I was trying to do or what I was trying to subvert with that particular book. It wouldn't have happened. And I also think my first children's book was about someone who's a fire starter. She's a pyromaniac. I don't know if I would have been that brash just after Fred was born, because I was probably a bit googly. Maybe now, but in those years, very much it changed how I wrote.
Do you... What I mean, it's maybe a quite a personal thing. My mum was a single mum. From you know, when I was four.
Right, right.
And
so early.
Yeah, early. And that's another thing I want to ask you in a minute in terms of how that informs your parenting. Because, well, I'll ask it now.
Yeah. Do it.
Because, so I've had, my mum was a single mum and a working mum. Mm. And I remember... I just have never questioned that that would be what I would do, you know. Mm. And I am a working mum, but I am very lucky in what I do in that I spend a lot of time at home. And recently, about 6 months ago, I had this sort of strange realisation that what I'd always thought all my life, which was being a mum is going to work and being a... And I felt like a real... Because my mum was a real inspiration to me. Mm. I felt like a sort of real responsibility to make sure that what I did was good enough for my kids to look at and think, oh, there's a reason she's not here. You know, I say to my kids when they ask where their dad is, I'm like, he's at work. Why is he at work? Because it's so much fun. That's what I want to say, which is what I say. You know, I don't go, so that you can have your Cocoa Pops and your, do you know what I mean? It's like, no, because he's having a great time, you know? And that's what I want them to feel like, to aspire towards.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, about whenever it was, probably a year ago now, I was just like, no, I have to cut back because I do actually want to be more at home than I had been. And that freaked me out because I was doing sort of the opposite of what a lot of my friends are doing, whose mums might have been at home when they were growing up. And then they were kind of going, oh, no, I want to be working, blah, blah. And I was just doing the opposite. But has that kind of... Has that in any way informed your...
Yes, I wanted to write children's books and books in general. I do too many things, but one of those reasons so I could be around for my son. Didn't want to have a proper job, and I've told him that. I said, I absolutely want to be around for you.
Yeah.
So you know, but I also think it's very important for your parents both to work, that you see that work can be fun.
Yeah, exactly.
And when I've had friends who've done that big stint and been away and they feel really guilty, I'm the person that goes, no, because that's a really good template for your kids.
Exactly.
They see the mum working. Sometimes your mum goes out to work and is away for a bit. That's fine, because that's what men do, and they don't get called up on it.
And just as much for boys as
really
for girls,
important.
You know, because boys
absolutely.
Are going to be, you know, they would expect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really important to show it and show, not tell, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's show that you're doing it, that you work from home and you work out. I mean, I'm lucky that I can be able to do that, and I say that to him. Some people actually have to go in an office.
That they hate, you know.
That they hate, and it's really boring and probably doesn't get paid that well, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
I think it's really, really important to show them that you can do that. But I would also, I mean, that was a funny thing. When he first went to nursery, there would be these mums, Tufnell Park mums, they'd say, when you didn't know them at all, do you work? I just thought, fuck off. What do you think I do? Well, mainly I'm on the chaise longue, you know. Sometimes I get up to get the chocks, or sometimes to just get someone to deliver them to me.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you mean? But there are some people who do that. But also respect to them, because you don't know the backstory of anybody. You do not know what motivates someone to be at home and what their domestic situation is like, and anything. But it was important for me to work.
Yeah, this goes back to the conversation Bianca and I were having a couple of weeks ago, and there were a few people who kind of contacted me and went, you sound really judgmental about stay-at-home mums, which is totally not the intention. But it did make me think, actually, essentially, it probably says more about ourselves.
Yes.
You know, in the sense that the thing that you... Yeah, and you're so sensitive about anything around your kids, if you feel like you're being judged by people who and are not even your friends or family or whatever.
They're not qualified. It's
just, they're not qualified.
And I'm not qualified to say that about anything else. But I think I remember saying to you, I was doing a job for someone. I had to visit her in our house, and she was a smoothie millionaire's wife.
Yes.
And she had two kids. They weren't there. She'd obviously
cut
rid of them. And we had a chat about this work thing, and she lived in this beautiful, very neutrally decorated home. But I thought, it's a bloody gilded cage. She looked so sad. But then I'm putting that on her, aren't I? Perhaps she was deeply happy. She just had toothache.
Yes,
I don't know.
Exactly.
It is hard, and I don't think we should be so judgmental. I don't. I'm too soft and namby now.
We don't kind of, there's no one that, and I don't mean this in a bad way if any of my friends are listening, but I don't. Any of my really, really good friends, I don't envy their lives because I know what their lives are like. So
because
I know that
honest.
They might have X, but they don't have Y, honest. And likewise with me.
Mm.
But the people who are that bit further away, and I guess there must be the way we look at other mums, almost like as a entity, is just what we are thinking about ourselves or what we're, as you say, we're kind of...
But also as humans, we are searching for answers all the time.
Yes,
and
yes.
I do think that bringing up kids yourself, I'm still searching for the answers. There's a template. There is a template somewhere.
Yes.
So you're constantly thinking, well, maybe actually that's a really good idea. I should have stayed home more and I should have... You're just searching for something's right. And obviously that's idiotic. There is no template.
Exactly.
There is no answer.
There's no answer.
We're muddling through. As long as everyone's alive, you know, when you wake up in the morning, I think that's the main thing. Really.
And also, I think the thing that comes through from this the most is that thing, or what you, I think, realise when you realise about your parents when you've had a baby is you go, oh, you then realise how much you were loved.
Yeah.
And then when you think, right, that's the rub. Like, that's all I can do is really love my kid.
Yeah.
Because, try and do the best.
You might be loved a lot, but your mum might have got chucked out when you were one for having too many parties. And now you look back at that and think that's quite strange.
Mum.
So she obviously enjoyed herself while loving her baby quite a lot. I think, Mum, at least you're a richly patterned textured human being.
Going back to what we're talking about in terms of the...
Yes.
Changing, like, because I really identify with that you felt you softened once you had
baby.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of my comedy was a bit mean. You know, it was a bit kind of like taking the piss. And
this is what this book had that I found that I was trying to write on this old computer. I was still slightly shocked about, other people. It was a bit like that, rather than, oh, we're all in it together, actually.
Yeah.
Carry on.
And I wonder whether... I mean, that's again another thing. Like, I wonder if I would have always been like that, or whether there was a kind of like a slight defensiveness or toughness because, you know, my parents split up, things weren't the same as other friends of mine at school. And so there was, that's how I developed that kind of.
Yeah.
Like coat, where I was like, it's not all brilliant, and it's a relative to that thing of like, if you've experienced grief or whatever, you kind of know that it's not necessarily going to all work out. I remember talking to a friend of mine again who's parents brought up when she was quite young, had quite a tumultuous childhood, and a mutual friend of ours was getting married to somebody and had said something like, what could go wrong or something like that. And we were a bit like, that's when we realised our first thought would always be with any relationship, why or how could it possibly go right? Like, we were the opposite. We were like, it's probably going to all go tits up.
Yeah.
But that sort of cynicism and defensiveness might have come from that. I don't know. And that having a child just totally, like, pricking a balloon, it just made it go, it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, but maybe it's a generational thing, and we'll look back when we're really, really old, that kind of in your 20s of at a certain time that we all had that so impress me kind of mindset, and I've been through it a bit. Yeah, give me some positivity. No thanks, actually, because that's not cool or clever. It may be that. I'm not sure. I do remember Fred when he did wake up at 4:30 every morning. He was so happy, just happy to be alive. And you know that feeling, and you just think, God, actually, there are bits of the world that are just wonderful. And you're also, you have this, have this power. You're the first person to go, look, sky, look, grass. Yeah. I've shown you a tree. Yeah. You've never seen one before. Things like that. But that's me being the cynical part of it. But the absolute amazement of being alive was just so heartening and took buckets of cynicism out of my body immediately. And it felt very physical.
There's
something about that. People have it with dogs, I think, when they're older as well. We're just happy to run.
There's a purity and simplicity in that.
I can't... There are no words I have to describe how wonderful that is and how it makes everybody being sick on you all at once and all the awful bits and having to rush to A&E because they've been sick everywhere and you worry they've got a temperature and you worry got this. It just makes everything fabulous. Yeah. And it's the thing you're not allowed to gush about to friends who don't have kids.
Well, also, you don't really do it very much anyway because you just feel so conscious that, I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. I think that we're social animals, and so we are conditioning ourselves not to be too excited about having kids.
Yeah.
Really, we're doing a lot of work when actually maybe the deep inner part of us just thinks, God, just to stay at home and sit with your kids nice and not write the novel.
Yeah.
I see, fuck it. Yeah. You know?
And just paint.
Yeah.
And
should we have a Jaffa cake?
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. That simplicity is maybe we're all gearing up for that, and everything else is a sort of a response.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There is a friend of mine described having teenagers as like being dumped really, really slowly. Where this baby that you are just staring into their beautiful eyes and they're staring at you as you know, their beloved mother. Mm. And then just slowly what's your experience of coming of age?
Well, I prompt him, go on, tell me, when did you think your parents were humans and we weren't like these all powerful gods? And he went, when I saw you get really drunk. And I thought, I wish I hadn't asked that question. You couldn't walk. I could walk. I just fell over the stairs. Yes. They got in the way. I said, but I haven't done it. You know, it was sort of, oh, God, I just thought, don't let that out. No. Why did I ask that
question? Why did you ask that?
Because I was trying to be cool, Mum.
And I wanted you to expect him to go,
well, never. Yeah. You're still a goddess to me. you won't forget me saying that as well. So there was a point. I've tried to pinpoint the exact the date. He won't go any further. How old he was. But I see it happening. But he's still all right. I'm hopeful. But it's a different situation because I'm now a single parent. And there's just me and him quite a lot of the time. And so he can't really risk the dynamic with just two of you in the house and Kat.
Yes.
He can't risk falling out with me too much because there's no other parent to then go to. Or to fall out with as
well.
Yes,
exactly.
The dynamic is very, very hard. And when my mum went back to being a single parent too, oh God, the template, when me and my sister were older and there were only three of us in the house in that way, and the dynamic was very much, we were all quite supportive of each other.
Yeah.
And I think it would be very, very different if there had been another parent figure there as well, because you can rebel against two. With one, it just is, it's bullying, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it'd be quite interesting to see it played out.
And also, I think if you're, and this is the case with us, with my mum as well, I think it's more, it has to be more democratic when the kids outnumber the parents.
Yeah.
Or like when there's two kids and one parent. Like, we just were much, everything. And also, I guess your parent also will... need, I mean, you know, my mum would come home from work and have an interesting story, which she'd tell me or my brother, which maybe if she was coming home to a partner, she might tell the partner.
Yes.
So actually, we were much more interconnected with her friends and her, you know, what she was doing. You know, we were quite involved in that. There was never the, you know, some of my friends who had parents, they were parents. Yeah, parents, you know, who were like a united front and they were, you know, they would kind of, you know,
I think it's really different.
It
and
like
I
that.
Like to feel that we have, Fred's not here to say anything, that we have some egalitarian rules, really. And we have to discuss everything and talk it all out.
Yeah.
If anyone gets upset with anything, we talk it all out. It's quite rational.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping it still will be. I tell him constantly not to take masses of drugs. He hasn't started yet, and I hope he doesn't. But, you know, I'm always trying to presuppose the stuff, and maybe I shouldn't. I'm trying to be too kind of, I'm your friend, or something like that. Yeah, why do you think I was too drunk that time? Oh, God, let's not go there.
But then
maybe I'm too much, but I'm trying to make it more of a level playing field.
No, I think that's good. I think
it's just
me
and him.
Yeah.
It's not child and mum.
If you can preempt it, then you know that if that's I think that's the only thing you can do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is to go, you might come across this, this might happen, and if it does,
this
is kind of what you need to do.
I was reading a Mixmag piece about legal highs, and I said, if you do want to look at the page, it's got how to take them safely, and you have to have a sober friend, and you have to just go, Mum, why are you saying this to me? And you have to make sure that you've got the doctor's number and the A&E's nearby. Maybe you should be near a hospital when you do it. I just think, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Maybe don't put these ideas on the child's head yet.
Yeah, maybe not.
But they learn about drugs from school, so he's always laughing about acid. Just like this child. Anyway.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
But also, I just think the biggest thing, I mean, I don't know what it'd be like when my kids get older, but, you know, the internet and how you manage that and your kid definitely and my kids ultimately will know more about it and navigate it much
better. But I'm quite annoying when there's a news story about a kid meeting someone on the internet and ending up chopped in the freezer. I tell Fred about it and I go, this happens. I don't want it to happen to you.
Yeah.
You don't talk to people online, do you? Just talk to friends. Make sure that I can supervise it. I do tell him. He probably thinks I'm this news bore.
Well, they probably think that they're just like, oh, of course. You know, it's a bit like the equivalent when we were kids was... Don't you know? If a man comes up to you with a little puppy, he says, "You know, with some sweets,
puppy,
and says,
it?
Do you want to come and see my puppies?" Yeah, it was always that, wasn't it? Then don't go.
Yeah.
And you're like, "Of course." You know what I mean? Like it was so obvious.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was. I guess. Oh.
Yes, and I think the things we have to navigate are exactly the same as our parents had to navigate with us. I don't think they changed. They just seem a bit frightening.
They're just they're different. They come in different.
We've got different
guises.
Names.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's the same stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was interesting, but why don't we talk about something else now?
I have mentioned, but I will mention again, 32-hour labour, Sophie. Five just seems just like, well...
I'm sorry.
You've really...
Yeah.
You did something
totally
really good in a past
out. I know,
past life.
I know.
Yeah, 32 hours. I had four midwives, and as a way of trying not to go mad, and way of trying to keep my sanity... I resolved that I would always, throughout my life, remember their names.
Oh, and
2 days later, I and I remember looking at one of the midwives and I thought, I've got the same Primark socks as you.
Oh.
And then after that thought, think, I've had loads of drugs now. I wish the baby would come out. Yeah. My son was born on 6/07, 2005. The thing that happened the next day was 7/7. We were at the Royal Free Hospital and I was in for a few days because of the C-section. So you're in the big, big, thick tights and they keep you in just to check that you don't die, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So within that, all the emergency cases from 7/7 got helicoptered into the Royal Free. So they shut it. So my mum and my sister came on the day that my son was born. Next day, when the in-laws are due up, they couldn't get into London. They couldn't get into town. They'd shut the hospital. And that was part of the, what kind of world have I brought my son into? There was panic. People had said it was an electricity fault. You could hear it sort of happen like a rolling news thing. But from that weirdness and that very, very hot hospital bed, you know how hot hospitals
are? Yes, they are. I forgot that. Yeah.
Absolutely boiling. They keep giving you paracetamol. You're thinking, no, I need something really strong. And so this was sort of unfolding and through a kind of, well, there's still probably quite a lot of morphine in my system, that haze and everything else and being in a war with people who'd all had C-sections or all had these new babies and they didn't really know who they were, there was 7/7 going on as well. So it was a very, very
strange thing. How did you find out about 7/7?
Well, first people couldn't get into work and you heard the nurses talking about it. They said there was an electricity fault at Liverpool Street. And then probably, because you've got the radio, you're allowed a radio in and things like that. You meant to turn your mobile off in those days. But then I kept getting all these texts going, are you okay? Are you fine? From people outside London just checking on their friends. It was very sweet. But it unfolded and someone then would come in and say, have you seen the news? On their break, one of the staff would. So that made it a very odd atmosphere as well.
Yeah. God, what an extraordinary
child.
Backdrop.
Yeah,
exactly.
This is what you were
welcome.
Welcome.
So what happened? Why was it 32 hours?
He wasn't breached. He was just in the wrong position. And I was induced in the end, had all the stuff, still wouldn't come out, I was awake through all of it. I just didn't sleep or anything like that. It was really, really hard. And then suddenly I was rushed to theatre.
Right.
As I recall, the anaesthetists were in smiley acid house T-shirts and dancing to the radio as they anaesthetised me. I think that was right because they did put the radio on.
Yeah.
They may not have had acid house T-shirts on. That might have been the delusion. And as I say, they whipped child up very, very quickly and took ages to pack me back in. One person I spoke to, one husband after the time went, oh, had a cesarean. He went, my wife had a cesarean. I was on the wrong side of the curtain. I'll never forget. But I obviously was on the right side of the curtain, couldn't see anything, just feel it. It's really odd.
Yeah, it must be.
It's really odd. Yeah, you don't feel very well afterwards, I would say that.
Yeah.
There was a point where I went to sleep and I hadn't slept for days and days and days. And my husband looked at me. And I think he prodded me awake in the end. And he went, I thought you might have died.
Oh,
and I'm still alive. Have we still got a bit fine?
Okay. Oh, God.
Yeah. There you go.
It's so huge, isn't it?
It's you know,
it's like, it's
thing.
So, that thing. Just
it is
that,
life and death.
It is life and death. And we're so protected from all of it all the time that you, yeah, something like
it's
that. I mean,
visceral.
Who thought that you could have done? I mean, you know, it's sort of funny and sweet now, but like, that's how extreme and dramatic and
and it is life and death. It feels when you're in it. It
yeah, and when you
like,
hear that,
this
you know,
is a bit of a moment.
And now you kind of go, oh, someone's having, you know, like I kind of jollily say, oh, my sister might be having a baby right now. And God, you know, and she's actually been having contractions for days. Actually, poor thing. And you know, and you think, oh, she's in that point now, and we're just going, you know, do you know what I mean?
I felt like a Lucian Freud painting, I must say, for the first few weeks, because you are so physical, and if you are feeding, you're just this mountain to this child, and you're bonded, the skin-on-skin stuff, it is quite weird.
It's amazing.
That bonding that you have and how physical it feels.
I remember thinking, this sounds really strange, I remember being surprised, I think maybe Zach had to have an injection or something quite early on, something, and I had this sort of realisation, I was like, that we weren't the same, that he had an injection and it didn't hurt me.
Yeah.
And there was this weird realisation that we weren't the same body.
Yeah.
You know, he'd been in my body and now it's really weird, isn't it? But
No, but it does fit. That's when the woman said about the hairdressing thing, I won't forget it, go to the hairdressers. And I thought, I can't leave part of me behind when I do that. That's 2 weeks after I've had a baby. That's part of my skin and I made him. I don't want to, but also probably I can't.
Yes.
Because I may die and he may die.
Yes,
if we're
exactly.
not connected even in the same room and he's on that little thing that Rachel from Friends had.
But that's the difference, I think, and that's what you don't understand before you have kids. Because you think, oh, you can't do anything and da 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 da. And it's like, actually, I didn't want, you know, it wasn't important enough for me to go to get my hair done, to leave my beautiful tiny son who I did want to be with.
Yeah.
It did matter to me that he was okay. So when he cried, I wasn't thinking, oh God, which I do now. When he's three, I'm like, oh, what's it now? Yeah.
They're very separate at three, yes.
Whereas, you know, then it was like, I just wanted him to be okay and I just wanted to be with him.
And so they are part of you and it is... It gets a bit biblical, though. Their pain is your pain.
Yeah,
it's bizarre.
Totally.
And for me to say that makes... I feel quite mad saying that now.
No, I agree.
But that's how it felt. Yeah. That anything he was experiencing... And I used to sometimes just look at him and think, I almost want to cry because I don't know what's going on in your head and I want to know what you're experiencing.
Totally. It's crazy, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's
crazy. Especially for cynical old bags who were... Oh, yeah. who were going, oh, no, you know, fuck him. Yeah.
Yeah. And now his main memory of me is obviously being really drunk and falling down some stairs.
No,
thanks.
It's not. It's one memory. It's a memory.
Okay. All right. It's only once.
What's the worst advice you've ever been given?
God. But... Well, I took this advice. A friend of mine had had a baby. She was a few years, probably about five by this point. She said, well, when you're pregnant, my friend said to me, probably no need to really sort of discuss it with anyone. So I went around not telling anyone I was pregnant with this huge... I went to illustration classes. I was lecturing at the London School of Journalism. I was writing. I wouldn't say. I think people must have thought, she's either pregnant or something's really wrong. I remember sitting behind a desk a lot thinking, I'll just sort of hide it. So people won't know. That was very weird advice. It was very weird that I took it. But this, again, it's part of the denial and it's also part of the fear that it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So that when I didn't have a baby, if I didn't come out of hospital with a baby, it wasn't like I kind of had experienced it. So I think it's part of that, a weird superstition thing of that. So that was the worst advice that I took as well.
Yeah.
I would say if anyone is pregnant, just tell people you're pregnant. Yeah. It's probably fine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And what's the what advice would you give to someone to my sister who's about to have a baby?
A midwife told me a really, really beautiful thing that I won't forget. She said, it's not always the right time, but it's the right baby.
Oh, that's really good.
I just love that. I just love it. Because all those anxieties and worries, it just makes them quell. And I think it is always the right baby.
Oh, that makes me want to cry.
Thank you to Sean Pattenden for coming in and making me cry. Almost making me cry. Not quite making me cry. Jenna Russell's the only person who's done that so far. Thank you, Jenna. Next fortnight, whatever, I will be talking to Sally Clark, who is a friend of mine, is currently a stay-at-home mum, and in response to some feedback we had on the show, we thought, let's not just talk to people who are working, but let's also talk to people who are at home and find out why they're still at home and what's going on in their heads. So I did just that with Sally, and some very funny stories, including possibly my favourite, where she says that there are no stay-at-home mums in Islington, so she's constantly kind of chasing nannies down the street to try and be friends with them, and they're like running out of doorways trying to get away from her because they don't want to be mates with her. I like the fact that if you never listen to that episode, that's all you will ever know about my friend Sally. And in some ways, that's all you need to know. But it's not. So do listen, because I think we will be we'll be covering a lot of stuff that we haven't covered yet on the podcast. So it's a goodie. Anyway, thanks for listening. I hope you have a good couple of weeks, and I'll see you then.
Bye-bye.